No, I said that one man is going to leave. And it's not you, Honorable Ladies. You showed me your attire, and it's good. But thanks very much, DDG. Thanks for making it as usual. We'll hand it over to you. Please let us discuss this matter with open minds and as South Africans. Over to you. Is there someone that you don't know, DDG, from the members? Yeah. Yeah. Let us say you'll speak about that offline. DDG.
Honourable members, good afternoon. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity for us as the department and the regulator, the NCR, to come back to you and just give you a sense of the status of where we are in terms of this matter that we think is very important, I think not only for the committee, but we think that it is important for the public in general. I do have a number of people here with us today. From the department, myself and the team is here, Mr. Andy Sapoton is here, and also Lars Mugaba. But the NCR team is also here, Chair. I think that basically is an indication of how serious we've taken this project. I do have here the CEO of the NCR on my right, Nomsa Mosekara, as well as the chairperson of the board of the NCR on my left here, Mr. Trevor Bailey. So we're not going to do the introductions in full day, just to know that the delegation is here and we are committed to this project, and we do want to see an outcome that will benefit all of us. And I think the committee has expressed the importance of this particular project. And you'll note, Chair, that because of that importance, we actually went out of the way in terms of our plan, because this was not on the plan of the department or the NCR, but we've gone out to make sure that we take the necessary resources and, you know, employ the relevant experts to also assist in coming up with some information that will inform this process. I just want to say, as a way of background again, just to recap, that the committee did raise an issue, which is a concern for the committee, but I think obviously because you engage more with constituencies, obviously these are the concerns of your constituencies, and that's how we take the issues that come from this committee. When the issues are raised, we then take it that these are the issues that your constituencies on the ground are raising, and that becomes important for us. Obviously, a concern related to a number of consumers that still have negative information on their record, which then affect their access to credit. And we've looked into that, and the committee did raise a possibility of the credit amnesty. So as a department and a regulator, we sat down to look at the white amnesty in 2006, 2007. But the question was, if we are talking about another amnesty now, what form should it take? What should inform it? But also to look back at what happened with the amnesty that was implemented before, to say what went wrong there, what was the impact, so that whatever we're going to implement this time around should be something that is going to make the relevant impact, so that we do not introduce a mechanism that is not going to achieve the desired results. So I think on our side, that's why we think this is important. That's why we had to go back to look at what happened in 2007. And I think in the last report, we did indicate that the impact of the last amnesty was not that significant. I think there was an estimation of around 3.2 applications in terms of credit applications following that. In terms of percentages, and we think that is not a good impact. And so what we then looked at was to say, what are the best ways of implementing this? So obviously for us to say what is best, we need to be informed by something. So we then engaged with the regulator and requested the regulator to commission a study to look at a number of issues. Look at the number of consumers that are impaired, look at the causes of that, look at what ways could be implemented to actually prevent that from happening in the future, and what mechanisms can we put in place to ensure that there is sustainability in terms of hello consumers interacting with the market without being impaired. So the research looked at all of those issues, and today we're going to share with you basically what the information is, what the findings are. But I must state up front, Chair, that the date of today's meeting for us was not necessarily suitable in terms of the reporting finalized. So the report has only been presented to us last week. And as the process between ourselves and the regulator, we still need to interrogate that report. Although the report will come up with recommendations, but those are recommendations of the independent assessor of that information. So what it will mean is that as an NCR and a department, we'll also look at those recommendations, but also look at the findings and see what final conclusions we can draw from it, which we can then bring back to this committee. And we do commit that still within this month we should be in a position to come back to this committee, and we'll be guided by the committee in terms of when they can expect. We can send a written report if the committee is not able to hear us on the matter in a form of a meeting. So I just want to say that upfront, so that the status of the report as presented, it should be understood within that context. So I just want to also indicate that the reason why we decided to commission this research, you've indicated, Chair, right now in the opening that you do, as a committee, think that this amnesty is important and it must happen. But you also alluded to the fact that you wanted to know how it can happen. And that is where we come in. And I think that is where the expertise that we've employed come in, to say these are the alternatives that we have. And if we implement this, and this is the outcome that we can expect. If we implement that, this is the outcome that we can expect. So that when we do that, we are fully aware of what we're going to achieve, but we are also fully aware of what could be the unintended consequences of what we implement. So we want to make sure that at least the job is thorough, that we don't have to come back again and say there should be another amnesty. We don't want to come back after 5 years and say there should be another amnesty, because we have failed to make sure that consumers actually become they remain in a clean slate, you know, on a consistent basis. So we don't want to subject this committee to that. We want to make sure that we do a clean job upfront, and so that and we have learned from the previous one. So it's not like this is done for the first time. And Chair, in addition to just the research pointed some of the alternatives that we can employ. But then in addition to that, we then commissioned an impact assessment to say, if when you employ these alternatives, what's going to be the impact? Because you can employ an alternative that is only going to benefit 5% of the people that are affected. So we wanted to see what the impact is. So the research also will then indicate to you what are the areas where we can actually derive more benefit and more impact. And I think that can be shared with you today. So Chair, without taking too much time, I think I just wanted to recap on the background, and so that everything that we're going to present here is understood within that context in terms of what is it that we're trying to achieve as a department and the regulator, and also to emphasize again that for us to advise Parliament properly, we also had to consult with the relevant stakeholders in the industry so that we can get a buy-in that is looking into achieving what will be in the best interest of the country, as opposed to what is in the best interest of just one particular area. So that kind of consultation also has taken place, and I think the CEO will take us through the presentation, and I think, Chair, after that we'll then be guided by yourself in terms of questions and clarification.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Chair and members, good afternoon. As the DDG indicated, I represent the National Credit Regulator, and we just like to point out that, you know, as the National Credit Regulator, we are also, you know, we are committed to this project. In order for us to make sure that this is done, you know, in a responsible manner, we've had to do the research, but also, you know, consult with industry, the relevant industry players, associations, but also to do an impact assessment study. So I'll take you through the presentation. I think we all now understand exactly what the purpose of this, you know, report is. The DDG has, you know, made an introduction, the Reverend introduction. And in terms of the process that we followed is that we consulted these relevant stakeholders. And I must just emphasize to say that there was, you know, a lot of cooperation, you know, from all the stakeholders that I listed there. We consulted with the Banking Association of South Africa, the Credit Provider Association, Microfinance of South Africa, the Consumer Goods Council, the National Clothing Retail Federation, Credit Bureau Association, the Register of Banks, NEDLAC, and the Department of Justice, which we have not indicated on there, but we did consult with them. There is a further consultation that is going to happen with NEDLAC, and also extensive. We also need to, you know, engage further on the consumer side with the consumer thing. We commissioned an independent assessor to look at this, to investigate and report on the proposed data removal exercise, possible affordability and assessment guidelines, to look at credit literacy initiatives, because the DDG pointed out we really want to make sure that when the amnesty does happen, that it is, it will be sustainable. We don't come back here after 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years to say, you know, we need another amnesty. And obviously look at other, you know, additional measures to assist consumers. We've touched on, you know, the some of the key stakeholders that we consulted with. Now, tentative, these are just tentative conclusions that the DDG pointed out. This is not final. We'll still come back with, you know, recommendations at this stage. What we'll do is just give you, you know, what the process that we followed and the, some of the findings, and we will interrogate the final report with the DPI before we can connect to the committee with our final draft recommendations. Now, there is significant support for appropriate affordability assessment guidelines. What we are saying is that the Act is not quite clear in terms of what affordability assessments, you know, credit providers, although they are required in terms of the Act to make sure that they do a proper affordability assessment before they can extend credit. We just want to go further and provide them with guidance. And I think it will be important, you know, going forward to do that. There's significant support for appropriate credit literacy programs. We want to make sure that consumers also understand that when this amnesty happens, that, you know, it does not mean that they must also make sure that they take responsibility in the credit that they, you know, the ones that they obtain from credit providers. There's significant opposition from credit providers and credit bureaus to the removal of any credit information. This came out during the assessment, during the interviews and consultations with the relevant stakeholders. But I must just emphasize that partly this was as a result of the fact that there was very little understanding in terms of what it is that we wanted, you know, that the department is looking to do. We were not in any way proposing a blanket amnesty. We were saying we need to look into this. We need to do a proper, you know, impact assessment and study before we can come up with recommendations in terms of what it is that we need to do within the amnesty proposition. So I think this came out because there was a, you know, local understanding of what it is what that we were seeking, you know, what the department is seeking to achieve. And as I said, there was a lot of cooperation from all the key stakeholders. Nevertheless, it is admitted that it is possible to significantly improve the credit records of consumer-impaired individuals. We are saying there will be amnesty. We will define that. We'll come back with definite in terms of what it is that we will look at. It is possible to achieve marginal increase in credit acceptance rates, through a limited data removal exercise. Any data removal exercise must be accompanied by significant education, particularly to explain, as I indicated, any data removal exercise does not amount to writing off the payment obligation. A clear credit record is only one consideration in applying for credit. There's a whole lot of other factors that, you know, obviously credit providers look at, and the information sits with the credit bureaus. Consumers should exercise caution when applying for and using credit. This will come out through the education, you know, campaigns that we will embark on. And part of what we may have to propose would be amendments to the DTI and Department of Justice legislation. The report is on the verge of being finalized, and the DTI will be, you know, referred to the select committee with the findings. Now, we did an impact assessment study. The actuary, the independent firm of actuaries and analysts, to conduct an impact assessment on the likely impact of various data removal scenarios. These scenarios included number of consumers impacted, degree to which consumers are impacted, credit acceptances, in the sense that when people apply for credit, you know, will the number go up or down because of, you know, the amnesty that we would later on, you know, propose, risk to credit providers' portfolios. Those are the factors that we'll need to, you know, continue to engage in and take into consideration. The removal of judgment information may also benefit credit impaired consumers. Now, remember, this is the findings, you know, that have come out of the independent assessor. The removal of address information under 10,000 would assist some credit impaired consumers to obtain home and micro loans. The removal of address information under 10,000 would benefit 86% of people earning less than 15,000. This came out of the impact assessment. The removal of dormant information would not significantly benefit credit impaired consumers. Now, remember, dormant information refers to inactive accounts. Okay. In conclusion, once the various reports have been finalized, the NCR and DTI will discuss the recommendations made and finalize the report. And this will be submitted, as the DDGs indicated, to the select committee. I thank you.
Chair, I think having presented the areas that we think are important for this committee, obviously there are important issues that have come up for us as well, that there may still be a need to further engage with some of the consumer groups. In terms of our consultation, you'll see that our focus has largely been on the credit providers as the people that are immediately affected by the proposed amnesty. But we think that there is room for further engagement, and that could still happen within the period that we are giving ourselves before we come back here. But we also think that there is room for the committee to also do that in its own time and processes. And Chair, I think the CEO has also just touched on the issue around removal of information. One of the things that came out from the study is that even where the credit information should be removed by law generally, the research found that the credit providers do still use it somewhere in the credit scorecard, that even when the information has been removed, it finds its way. So I think that's an indication of, I think that's where the CEO comes in with the suggestion that there may be a need in the amendments to try and deal with that part so that it doesn't continue to happen. Where the information by law is supposed to be removed, it should be removed, and it should not then further prejudice the consumer going forward. So I think as we explain this, I think the areas where we need the legislative amendments, we are taking those into account, and we've already included them in the proposals that we have that we'll be bringing through to Parliament in terms of the amendments to the National Credit Act. The other aspects, Chair, around the affordability guidelines. As much as the affordability assessments are being done by credit providers, I think in order to sustain the status of consumers as being clean consumers, we need the credit providers also to have like consistent way of doing affordability assessments, so that the one credit provider doesn't do it right and the other one does, you know, does it differently. So we want consistency in that, and we think that the guidelines will assist in that. And I think it is in the power of the regulator in their day-to-day implementation of legislation to do that. So that is something that can be done within the powers of the legislation, of the regulator. The last thing that I also just wanted to point to, Chair, is that some of the areas that the impact assessment study is showing us will achieve more in terms of impact, you'll see that covers a whole range of vulnerable consumers. Remember that the intention really in terms of legislation of this nature is to protect vulnerable consumers. And we see that if you're going to be achieving impact for 86% of the consumers, impaired consumers, then that's significant, you know, is a significant number, and then it means that it's one of the alternatives that, that maybe we need to pursue. But as we said, we'll come back to the committee with the concrete proposals now, having learned from this. Chair, I'm just going to go and just give the opportunity to the chairperson of the board to say something, and then from the on chair, with your permission, we'll then stop. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I really just want to make some concluding remarks. And just speaking by saying that we, the National Credit Regulator, are very aware that the removal of credit information must strike the right balance between helping consumers and avoiding undesired consequences. Our research is beginning to show a number of things. Firstly, that there is a need for a credit information amnesty that assists the consumers not just to fix their credit record, but to minimize further impairment. The draft affordability assessment guidelines, which have been referred to, we believe will go a long way to ensuring that the credit information amnesty does not result in further impairment. And as I've indicated, those guidelines are being worked on. They're going to be published for comments in due course. And we believe that the regulatory environment will be enhanced by these affordability assessment guidelines, as it will then allow us to proceed further to proceed with a credit information amnesty, should the research as a whole show that that would be the appropriate way to proceed. Some comments have just been made in regard to those findings, and it really is worth repeating, because this information is beginning to make compelling sense. The removal of adverse information under 10,000 Rand will not result in an increase in portfolio risk. That's what the research is beginning to show. And that's starting to say some very, very significant things around access to credit for the poor. We're also seeing, secondly, that 86% of consumers earning less than 15,000 Rand will also benefit from the amnesty. And so what that's also beginning to show is that any proposed credit information amnesty will also begin to work its way into the middle classes. While the benefits our research shows may not significantly increase access to credit, what it may well do is increase employment opportunities, which would then also allow people to obtain accommodation. We know that that's also a very real challenge for our society. And when we talk about accommodation, we're looking at either rental or ownership. And obviously, credit amnesty will always have to take into account that people can obviously only qualify for credit if they can afford it. It's really just an underlying and base for the granting of credit. Nothing's going to change around that insofar as the credit amnesty is concerned. And in short, then, what we wish to do today is to reassure our stakeholders that further consultation is going to take place. Our research as it currently stands is starting to indicate that further consultation still needs to take place, but in fact that this research is worth pursuing. We're not going to proceed with any intervention unless it is thoroughly considered and in the best interests of the industry as a whole. We're going to also ensure that the financial system is not prejudiced by any appropriate intervention that may need to be made. And we're going to continue to engage as the research is the first step in this process. So really what we want to say is that any proposed intervention is going to be responsible, it's going to be in the best interest of all the stakeholders, it's going to be rational, it's going to be lawful, it's going to be reasonable, and we hope that it will pass constitutional muster. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you. We are done on our side, and thank you for the opportunity, Chair, for giving us the department to share with you the findings.
Thanks very much. You know, I'd like to thank the department and NCR for the work that they've done so far, and just for showing commitment to be part of this project. Thanks very much. You know, a lot has been done. It shows that you were ready to work with us on this matter, that you didn't say now you can do whatever you want to do. Your approach is really good. We also reported even in Parliament, in the SOP, that we're surprised in a positive way by the reaction from the department and NCR. So keep it up. On these issues, you know, if we refer to the 2006 one, the first one, quite a number of applicants could not even meet the requirements. So this is our first point of call, that we had something and it didn't work. That is why most South Africans would always say, hey, you know, this government is very good. It has good policies, best constitution in the world, but the thing is implementation. So we couldn't implement even the first one because it had some holes. That is our approach, that we come with that approach, that now we want to fix those holes so that we implement this thing properly. You will recall that in the summer last year, one South African wrote a letter to the president and said, please help us. I can't fall under the RDP to get a house. The banks don't want to assist me. They say I earn more, even though I earn 9,000 or 14,000. All those people, when the president acted on that issue and created that cushion to subsidize all those consumers, they still cannot be hurt because they are listed. So we take some action when are raised by the public, but at the end of the day, they still do not assist communities. So we want to go to the president. Now, what we've done by bringing in the subsidy to subsidize these people, we as parliament have come up with the amnesty thing so that we all come together and then assist people. You must remember also that consumers were also victims of the recession, and nobody takes care of this. Only the business people and so on, consumers are never mentioned. But they were the ones that were under the put. You know, everything was falling on them. Whether it's a recession, whether it's a price increase, they were just under the put. So this is the time that we feel we should be doing something. Also the community, our approach has been, we look at other forms of amnesty, the ones that we heard from the TSC. We say consumers here didn't rob anybody, didn't kill anybody, you know. They just robbed Peter to pay Paul, and they ended up with a bad record. We forgave people that had done really bad things. What about ordinary consumers? We forgave people that had illegal firearms. We forgave people that had cars that were not roadworthy. We've had these amnesties. And last year we had people released from prison. You know, they get remission. The issue is, what about consumers? So that is the approach of the committee. We believe if we can have a certain form of amnesty, that will contribute to job creation, that will also improve the economy. Because I can tell you, there is no scientific research. Most civil servants are blacklisted. If not 70-80% of them, let alone other ordinary people. But we're going to find this as a community as we move around doing it. I'll still come back to this. I want members to come before and ask questions and so on. Honorable Abraham, are you the first one?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. First, the air con is killing us here. It's not working. And we're over 29 and a half. Yes, I just want to know...
Martin, can you please try to sort of...
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to know what sort of communication will be done with education to the communities and on what level, because there's many people in rural areas, you name them, in all of South Africa, that would like to know if the amnesty is granted. And yes, the Chairperson is correct, it affects everybody. And interesting that will... that files that will be removed, will it be somewhere archived? for future reference, or will be completely removed so that it doesn't affect people when they apply there somewhere. You can still see, although it won't be used, but it can still be seen because there could also be a disadvantage. Thank you.
Hello, Pauline.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, debt for one person to benefit, another one has to pay. They say socialism fails when you run out of the other person's money. Now, you were talking about the number of letters, 99% of the letters that you've received. As a committee, we have not seen any of those. So I think you have an unfair advantage. You also saying that civil servants, 70% or 77%, if not more, are blacklisted. Yet, we are faced with Eskom wanting to increase our electricity rates over 5 years by 16% per annum. I met one of the policemen in the foyer of the mosque building the other morning who said, if it goes at that rate, madam, my bond payment will be less than my electricity account. So we must keep all these things in mind and not just try and bluff ourselves that we're doing what is right for the community. I would also like, with this beginning that our entrance that I've had, I would like to ask, what is the amount of the 86% of the people earning less than 15,000 rand a month that must be cleared? If you could give us an indication of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I share your sentiments about the philosophical approach about amnesty on many levels and get to a so-called clean slate and start with a new beginning. And I think that's part of the challenge that we experience in South Africa, is to get to a point where we can establish a middle class that can engage on many economical activities, including the one of borrowing. Now, I think it was to South Africa's benefit that the NCR and the appropriate legislation implemented it before the 2007 and 2008 difficulties that the world had. I believe it saved South Africa a lot of trouble. But the reality is that we must address certain issues in our society, and one of them is the one that's on the table this afternoon. The unfortunate reality is, if we look at the processes that was envisaged, for instance, to deal with some of the elements in the National Credit Act, like the one about the debt counselors, it creates very serious question marks about the capability of the system, and to a great extent, the legal system to deal with these issues. Now, we hear a lot about the possible solutions, but the one CEO and DDG that we don't hear the issue about what legal processes are envisaged to deal with this. Because if we take the example, for instance, of the debt counselors, where eventually it was about constitutional principles, that can create serious challenges, legal challenges, for both the consumers and the people that's been owed the money, be it the banks or whoever. So the first issue that I want to raise is, what legal process do you foresee? And if you can give me the answer, how will that process differ from the ones that was experienced with the debt counselors and the bottlenecks that was experienced? Then the last issue that I want to raise, Chair, is the issue about the firm that was appointed. Certainly this firm had to have a mandate. How did they embark on this process? How did they achieve this? What methodology did they use to get to this recommendation that's now on the table? Because that's quite an important element in terms of coming to a product. What research techniques did they use? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir. Some will come on the second round. The department and the NCR will respond. but Honorable von Linge, Elisa. You know, as soon as we dealt with this thing last year, Honorable Sinclair would know I dealt with it thoroughly in my constituency. Dealt with it thoroughly. Let's agree that I will invite you for this day to my constituents in a public meeting, and you'll find those letters also in the file. I'll go with you. So it's my constituency thing. It's not that people were responding to because we are honored. You know, you remember our task in the last meeting was Department NCR, go and do your thing. Do research, do it, and members, go and do your thing. And that is what we did. And this is the response that I got from my constituency. People saying so. But did department and NCR and chair of the board, I don't know who is that. DG?
Chair, we'll just, that's maybe it would be appropriate to start by allowing Stephen Logan to just briefly explain the methodology. And how they went about doing this. I think that will be brief. But I just wanted to say, Chair, that as we indicated, the recommendations that are here are the recommendations of the service provider, which then, as the department and the regulator, will interrogate and come to the committee with the recommendations that we think should then be implemented. So I just want to reiterate that, Chair, so that it is clear that we, when we commission a research, they're supposed to give us their independent view based on what they've been doing. Then we'll look into that, and then we'll look at in terms of what we want to achieve, and we'll come with recommendations that will talk to that. But I just want to allow Stephen to do that, and then and from there on we'll then respond to your questions, Honourable Members.
Honourable Members, Chair. The report was based on, first of all, trying to make sure that we understood what industry thought of credit information removal. Was there any possibility of their buying into such an exercise? And we wanted to get their feedback. So we met with a significant number, as you know, of industry associations, and also try to get an understanding of not only market conduct issues, but also prudential issues by going to the Reserve Bank and meeting with the Registrar of Banks. And there were significant issues that we uncovered in that process, and we're able to then say, well, how are each of these issues, how do they come together as a whole? What is the impact of them? Can they be, are they insurmountable? Or can we address the concerns that have been raised? So we invited written submissions to be made by each of the industry associations. We received several written submissions. We invited the Credit Bureau Association to go and do their own research they came up with after a significant analysis on their part. They came up with their own research as to various interesting and useful pieces of information. But in addition to that, and in addition to reading widely and reading through all the different publications and research reports that have been done on a whole lot of different topics that impact on this, a firm of actuaries were appointed. And that firm of actuaries was given the initial proposal that was brought to your committee that talked about removal of judgment information or of adverse information and with particular thresholds. In addition, a further four scenarios came up and we investigated six scenarios in total. That data, we basically had to get the data from the credit bureaus and then get the actuaries to apply their minds to that data and go and run different scenarios, queries as to what would happen, both with the current data set, and then if you remove the information, what would happen to the credit scores afterwards? And what would happen to the portfolios of the credit providers? Where would the risk increase through the removal of the data, or would it stay the same? And so we believe we have done a very thorough job in trying to make sure that we have considered the real concerns of the credit providers and looked at how they can be addressed. At the same time, our particular view is that a credit amnesty is appropriate.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of education, the question was around how we intend to do this. We normally work through our partners, we work through existing structures to disseminate information to consumers. For instance, we've embarked on an initiative, an education initiative with the DTI to reach out to rural areas, because the NCR, we used to have challenges, because we don't understand the protocols, whenever you try to engage with, consumers in rural areas. We will use, existing structures. We'll find other, new ways of reaching out to consumers, because it's going to be important for us to also just go on road shows, to do that.
In terms of data removal, yes, I think it's going to be very important to make sure that, in instances where we are saying information has to be removed, information must be removed and mustn't find its way somewhere else, so that it does not prejudice consumers. I'll ask the DDG perhaps to just touch on the legal processes first, because before I can deal with the challenges faced by that councillors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just in regards to your question around the legal processes to deal, especially with the challenges that came out of the system of debt counseling, we have been engaged in this process for a very long time, actually, since this was implemented. And you'll recall that when the debt counseling mechanism came in place, the first thing was around the fees that were being charged, the competence of the debt counselors. So the issue just grew and grew to the extent of saying, what are the powers of the debt counselors, for instance? Even when there is a debt counseling process, a review process, you find that the court system is still being used to repossess while people are under debt counseling and so forth and so forth. So the problem started growing as the Act is being implemented. And what we then did was to commission an impact assessment on the implementation of the Credit Act itself. And one of the things that have come up is exactly around that area, to say that we need to amend the legislation to deal with those loopholes that were actually making this not implementable in the best way that we actually envisaged it. So the legislation is being amended. Andy Sabaduana, who is the director in the department, is responsible for that process. And it is on a parliamentary program, so it will come to this committee. So it is on a parliamentary program for this particular year, and so it will come through here. But those are the issues that we interrogated. But just interrogating that issue involved a whole lot of other issues around the processes that are administered by the Department of Justice, for instance. The magistrate court rules and so forth and so forth. And that engagement also helped us in also getting the Department of Justice to start reviewing some of their rules, which were also making that process to be very complicated and also underlining the objectives, basically, of why the system was put in place. So we have done a thorough job around that, identifying the loopholes and then also indicating what mechanisms are going to be put in place to address it. And that process is on track, so you can be guaranteed you'll see that process being corrected. Thanks.
I'd just like to deal with two issues, and the first question, one of the questions that was put was, what is the level of indebtedness insofar as the 86% of persons are concerned? Now, currently we don't have an average for what of that level of indebtedness, but what we can say is that up to 2 million people would in fact benefit from any proposed credit amnesty. So obviously that's a very significant number, and it could well have and benefits for those persons insofar as the ability to obtain further credit is concerned, if they can afford it. And the other issue that perhaps just needs to be dealt with a little further is Member Abrams raised the question, well, what happens to the file? Now, clearly how these things work is that it's unlikely that the Pardon Amnesty would say that a file should be destroyed. But certainly what it would mean is that credit providers wouldn't necessarily be able to take into account the fact that previously there'd been there had been marks against one's creditworthiness. So there would be levels of compliance that would need to take place. In other words, if an amnesty takes place, then obviously the amnesty must be complied with in the consideration of the granting of credit. And in the event of any violations of that, and then that's what the National Credit Regulator is there for.
Chair, I just want to go back to the education part and to say that we will obviously have to come up with a proper plan to make sure that consumers at large, you know, understand that there is this process in place and that, you know, there's an opportunity for them so that everybody, you know, knows that this is happening. So we'll have to come up with a plan to do that. Thank you.
Honourable members, you will recall that we gave ourselves 6 months to get this briefing in our first meeting. And we said, I think we should take into cognizance that the department is saying it still has got to meet with the NCR. They did indicate with the committee that, you know, can we shift this date about reporting, but we said, you know, we agreed. We don't want to be said Parliament says this and something else happens. We agreed that within 6 months they will come back and report research would have been done. This has happened today. Now it's not fine. We still have to engage. They still have to engage amongst themselves. We still have to engage with communities. Go to different provinces and find out what is happening there. So I think if there is really something pressing that one wants to ask, you can ask it if it is pressing, but we want to give ourselves another time frame. That is why we are a bit less time. Your engagement from today, when next can we meet with us on this issue? We can meet on any day at any time.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If we can also know about the dates when they go out in our provinces so that we can also help mobilize our community. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll let them consult. But when we want to move out of this room, we want to know the date, the time frame that will be. CDG?
We understand the timelines are very tight. But we will commit to come back to this committee within a month. So if you give us a month, we'll engage amongst ourselves, prepare a final report and documents that can be presented to this committee as final documents. So that's what we'll appreciate.
And if it happens that within a month, during those days, the committee or NCOP is somewhere in Mpumalanga, in Mpompo, you'll follow us there and to that presentation. That's fine. Any other outstanding issue before Adam?
Sorry, I was out of the room. I had to apologize for some urgent things. The deputy president of the agency is in our area. And so, yeah, it just jumped. Don't ask how high. But I just want to find out, as there has been a lot of controversy the last couple of days, weeks and months about prescribed debt that have been revived again by attorneys that buy debtors' books and all that. Although the debt has been prescribed already, have you consulted the Law Association or the Attorneys Association or that? Since buying all these books, they rain, contact people, threaten them, summons them, take them before court, although the debt is prescribed. So a case that has been recently in the news was the Health and Record case, which books have been bought, the Sambo case, Sambo Institution, those institutions where books have been bought, credit books. If you consulted them, isn't that also one of the things that will be a stumbling block, taking that prescribed that revives it again?
Thank you.
Through your chair. Certainly that is one of the issues that we have, we are going to seriously consider, because there is, we consider that to be, you know, illegal. So it's one of the factors that we will, you know, include, that we will seriously, you know, going to look into.
Just a further comment on that is that if in law it is prescribed, then in fact that is a total defense to the claim in law. So it does seem to me that one of the things we've got to be doing is we've got to get that out there into the community. We've got to let consumers know the fact that they have rights in that regard, and that if they can't afford legal fees, they must then go to the law clinics, non-profit law centres, and to, because in many of those cases almost need to be fought on an individual basis. But I think the message we've got to get out there is that if debts have prescribed, then in fact there's a total defence to it, and one mustn't ignore them, but at least it obtain some form of legal advice.
Yes. So I just want to say that this is one of the issues that we've been discussing in the review of the legislation, because it's come out as one of the things. But I think from the NCR side, it is one of the things that they need to enforce, because it's illegal. So they need to investigate these issues, because consumers cannot be... Remember that the whole purpose of this law is to protect those vulnerable consumers. So if we expect them to, on an individual basis, to be fighting the cases against the collectors, then it becomes a challenge. So I think there must be a strategy that we devise on our side to say how we're going to deal with it, such that consumers are aware of that, but they are also protected against such practices. It's not only that, there's a whole little, a range of things that have come up during the review, which I think when we come to brief the committee on the amendments or to the credit, you'll find that there are some of the things that in the legislation we're trying to deal with. Thank you.
Chairperson, I can't remember whether the report of the actuaries is available yet, or if it's still outstanding, and when can we have access to that, please?
Really, those are some of the documents that we'll bring back here when we report back to the committee. Thank you.
Yeah, my comment on the last issue that was raised by Honourable Adams in the chair reporting there is that it is easier said than done. You know, when these people come there and they want this money, the NCR is not there, and people know nothing. And when they demand, it's good. I think we need to look at the issue of our education, really, of our campaign. Go to print and electronic media so that it's always there. In my constituency, one teacher came, I was phoned, they wanted to repossess a car without a court order, just a service provider. Now, we haven't paid for 2 months, we're taking the car until I had to ask for a court order. Now, consumers do not know that they need to produce that. If they come for your car, you negotiate, they say, we'll keep it in the pound, you agree. So we need that type of education. That's one part that is really lacking. I think we should start, as honorable members, anything, doing that before even we reach the finality of this matter. Thanks very much. We'll look into, we've got a committee strategy meeting in early March or something, end of March. I don't know whether it will suit that we have the department in NCR, whether it will be good, because we have parliament, taking parliament to the people, 16, 19. Maybe we can ask that they follow us, we ask for a day. But we'll discuss about this. But we want a suitable date before the end of this financial year. That's the idea.
I don't want to override, but I think it would be good if we have the department also on our roadshows that we will be having with this community meetings, because as everybody has alluded, the awareness campaign about this prescribed debt, the conditions attached to it, and that people doesn't know, you know, they don't know, and it's not people buying books from shops and all that, so that we can kill maybe five birds, not birds, but I mean also jy weet wat ek bedoel.
You want to
operate as a woman but kill five birds with one stone, so that we don't have to go after reinvent the wheel, and that so that we as the committee gives our view and the department also gives the follow up or the training within or the public awareness campaign, because that's the point where we are lacking about. Because even with this amnesty, as I've read from the department's documents, people will think that, look, I owe 5 million. So owing 5 million, will I be able to get amnesty? We need to categorize, if I made debt a year ago, will I be able to get amnesty from a debt from a year ago? If I care for it, because we'll also have that chance. Although there are billionaires, but they'll jump on the bandwagon to take the chance to say, but I've just opened up and I've bought just a new house in Fresnay and all that, 29 million, 45 million or 55 million a year ago. Do I also qualify for the amnesty? How are we going to say to this person, well, you don't qualify or you do qualify or that? So we need to put that whole thing into perspective in terms of, do we say it is dead over the 5 years? Is it dead older than 3 years, or is it dead older than a year?
Thanks. It looks like our next meeting will be very much fruitful, where we sort of finalize this issue. As this financial year ends, we want to have moved. This committee has taken a decision that this will be one of our legacy projects. That as we finish this term, as we leave Parliament, this is the legacy that we want to leave. So please assist us on this mission. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for attending. I want to thank the people from the media. I saw even in the morning, all these days, this issue is on the media. Keep those tapes rolling and those cameras rolling about this issue. And as you report, please write about educational campaign also. Thanks very much. The meeting is staged. Honourable.
You've just been talking about Parliament to the People, 16 to 19 March. Where did you get that date from? Point number one. Point number two, if you have a schedule on that, may we please share in it. Point number three, at our programming meeting this morning, we were informed that all the committees must hand in their programs for the rest of the term as soon as possible. So how on schedule is our committee with submitting the program?
That is submitted. The rest will talk offline. The meeting is adjourned.